You are listening to the Improv Save My Life podcast, brought to you on Bits, the Boston Improv Talk Station. All right, welcome to episode 87 of the Improv Save My Life podcast. I'm your host, Tom Boyer. Two guests this week, both of the independent improv group Cuddle Party. We have David Thomas. What's going on?
Oh, not much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. David is a stand-up comedian. He also co-hosts and co-produces stand-up break-in at the Riot Theater on Thursday nights. And Phoenix Landing Comedy Presents, when is that?
On Tuesday nights.
Tuesday nights. Mm-hmm. Cool. As I said, he's a member of Cuddle Party. And you do a Oregon Trail improv show?
Yeah, Ron and I both do. It's based off the computer game that everyone played in school. It's just,
it was such a treat to be doing anything other than actual work, even if it was a shitty game.
Well, it's fun because I get to be the god in a sense, and I just inflict these horrible, events on Ryan and the rest of the cast. So it's particularly cruel fun for me. And then
it always had that
roll and adapt.
It had that shooting part, which is what I think everybody looked forward to. And it lasted 20 seconds or something.
Yeah.
And the controls were so bad,
mm-hmm.
It was hard to even get a rabbit or something. But
you have to use the arrow keys to adjust in these eight different directions,
yeah.
And a button to start and stop walking. Yeah.
I feel like you don't even know when it's about to happen. It just pops up. You're like, oh, shit.
Right.
And other guest this week is Ryan Daly. What's going on?
Nothing much. Got my name right. That was awesome.
I actually asked about this.
Okay. You clarified.
Actually listened to Danielle Andruskowicz and Molly Burke's episode today.
I'm pretty bad with names.
You got both of them wrong in the game. You should have.
In fairness, Molly Burke's name is spelled exactly
same
Bork.
Bork, yeah. And then Danielle's is spelled I don't know,
whatever.
Something horrible.
But I was in a group with Molly at the time, so I probably should have known that. But we never referred to each other by last name.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
You are a member of Comedy Sports Boston. Also,
yes, indeed.
Member of Idiot Box, which is an indie improv troupe.
Yeah, yeah. We do sort of a television themed improv thing. So we have improvisers watching, and the television is improvised.
It's a cool idea.
There's kind of layers of it.
Yeah, it's an awesome idea.
Two layers.
It's a lot of fun to watch.
Nice. And you will be doing stand-up for the first time.
Yeah.
At stand-up break-in on Thursday, July 23rd. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah, under the aegis of David Thomas right here.
Was this, I can't remember, did I force you into this or did you volunteer?
I think I volunteered.
Okay.
But it was other people that sort of like, oh, you should do that.
Oh, yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. All right. Yeah. And then you gave me a date, 4 months away. It's
yeah,
like, oh,
yeah.
It's never going to happen. All right. And
what?
Now it's July.
That's how you convince people to do it, because I give them a date and they're like, well, that's plenty of time to write 5 minutes. And then it's always the week before and they're like,
Before I got into stand up, back before I quit drinking, I always wanted to try. Did I say stand-up? I meant improv, but...
Oh, yeah.
If you want to get into stand-up...
I have a great opportunity for you.
Well, I didn't know about improv at the time. Mm-hmm. This was 5 years ago or something. But I knew a bunch of stand-ups, and I wanted to try something, different.
Mm-hmm.
But I was such, a slacker back then that I was never going to do it. So I told, all I used to do was hang out at the bar. So
yeah.
I told everybody at the bar, I'm like, listen, I'm going to do stand-up by Thanksgiving,
mm-hmm.
and hold me to it. And I kept saying it, so they would hold me to it. And then it was 2 days. It was the day of my show. I was doing some open mic. I'm like, shit.
Yeah, right.
I guess I got to follow through because I had a bunch of people coming to watch. So I wrote a stand-up act in a night. And
yeah.
Got really drunk and tried to do it. It wasn't terrible either.
That's a very supportive bar crowd.
Yeah.
They all came to the show. I just assumed they were all going to forget too.
Yeah, they were. I spent enough time there that they wanted to support me.
Nice.
I've done it a couple times since, but
mm-hmm.
And it's something I'm interested in doing more. But I don't know. I want to have a good act.
Sure.
Which I know everybody would like to have a good hangout.
Yeah. Well, it's surprising how supportive the Boston stand-up scene is. I mean, I think a lot of people are afraid to try it because there's, like, this negative perception of stand-ups in general.
Bunch of lone wolves running around.
Like, just hating it when other people do well and everything, but it hasn't been the case at all.
It's crazy, because I had a Middle East show on Memorial Day, and you did stand-up there.
Mm-hmm.
But a bunch of stand-ups have reached out to me looking, like, for show opportunities. I'm like, that was really it. Like,
yeah.
But I'm thinking about trying to put together an open mic if I can find a bar or someplace to put it on.
Yeah, for sure.
It seems like, and there's a lot of open mics now, but it seems like all the shows I've been to, there's still people waiting to get on, you know, get stage time. So it seems like there's still...
The list is... Some are just really popular. Like, Middle East on Tuesdays is, you know... If you wait to sign up, you're not going to be going on until 12:30, and they start at 9, and or 9:30. I can't remember, but no, I mean, yeah, it's
yeah. That's the issue I was running into with that last Middle East show. They won't shut down the restaurant until they want to shut it down at 10.
You're right?
Like, who the hell is going to come out at 10?
But yeah, right.
Apparently, people do.
Who's eating at the Middle East at like 9:30?
Right. People waiting to go on.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah,
that's how they get you.
Exactly.
I used to go to that the Middle East open mic a lot. I never went up, but a friend of mine, like, I was writing with, he was doing stand up, and so I would, like,
be like his writing partner.
Yeah, we'd work on stuff for that, and like we were working on a show.
Uh-huh.
It's a very ambitious sitcom idea that we had.
Oh, that's cool. How'd it go?
Well, we...
That sitcom was called Seinfeld.
Yeah. Wow! Holy shit!
Yeah, no, he got real busy with work. Was basically still, like, away every weekend. Mm. But I should get him to do, because he's pretty funny. Get him to do your stand-up break and get back into it. But, yeah, he's actually how I started doing improv with him. Is we were like, oh, let's get some more writing tools.
Right.
So, and then he, I don't know, maybe being more of a stand-up mindset, did not like the improv so much.
Sure.
But I kept going with it.
Yeah. There's a lot of people who are very strongly into one or the other. They don't like to do both.
Yeah, it's interesting, because it's all comedy, really. Mm-hmm. But then there's some people like, I dabble in it, you know.
Sure, sure. I guess it's just like what you become, end up being more comfortable with. I mean, so many people like don't like the idea of having to be personal enough to where, like, I worked on this and I wrote this. Now this is for your approval. Whereas then with stand-ups are like, I can't just go out and do nothing and then make something out of it. It's odd.
So why don't we start finding out how you got into stand-up, I guess.
Oh.
Did you start with stand-up, or were you into improv?
Improv. I moved up here from Virginia 3 years ago, and moved because I hated Virginia. I didn't want to live in D.C. or Richmond, which is where all my friends were going. Got a job up here, and started doing improv because I had no friends, and figured this was a good way to meet people. And then,
which it is.
Yeah, and then taking classes at IB, and... you know, at first doing it to, you know, meet people and have some fun, but then, like, you get to like, the third or fourth level, and you start thinking, like, maybe I have a knack for this. And, yeah, just sort of stuck with it. That was in, like, October 2012. So I've been doing that for a long time. That's how, like, Ryan and I met, running in the same circles.
Mm-hmm.
And in stand-up, it was Josh Poirier who convinced me to do this show on New Year's Day in 2014, which is where 50 comics go up and they just have 2 minutes each and they just tell one joke. And he's like, you can do that. That's easy. And then I met Kevin Quigley, and he started putting me up at Johnny D's, and then got hooked.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you went through the IB curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
At what point did you start performing? Aside from, like, the shows.
Yeah.
Shows.
Oh, man, I'm trying to think. It was pretty much solely classes with the occasional, they do the jam on Wednesdays. Doing that on occasion, but I feel like the very first show I was cast in outside of like showcases was Bill Sharon's show Frisky Disco, and it was for a one-off in like last July or August or something. And then sort of from there, like getting that confidence where like, hey, I actually auditioned for something and got cast for something. Now I can, maybe that means I'm good enough to do that for other shows too. And then, I think that was the first one last summer.
Nice. And how did Cuddle Party come about?
Well, Cuddle Party was...
I'm actually curious about this.
You don't know the origin?
I've heard bits and pieces. I'm the most recent member, though.
Yeah. Ryan joined back in what, like January, December?
Something like that.
Yeah. To my knowledge, the original members that are still in Cuddle Party are Chris Kaufman and Danielle Andruskwick, who has been on here before, and also Ben Mosier, but he has had a kid and therefore has disappeared from comedy things for the most part, except for Comedy Store with Boston. He's involved in that.
He's coming out of the cave a little bit.
Yeah, but it was them and a bunch of people who they knew through classes. And when I joined, I came on with Todd Page, and then three others who then ended up leaving for different reasons. And we went through like a big shift. It was last summer, actually. Two of our members left, and then Taylor Cotter and Ashley Volz ended up joining. And then Todd got all stars in his eyes and left for Chicago. And we wanted to have one more person, so then Ryan and Ashley have done a ton of stuff together. They do Idiot Box, and so we brought on Ryan, and that's pretty much it.
Brought me on and sort of dropped the deconstruction at the same time.
We were running the deconstruction, which is, I always just sort of thought of as like a reverse Herald in a way. I don't really know shit about the Herald. I did the classes and then I forgot about it. But, we were doing a very specific form, but then we just started really gelling and like getting the kind of chemistry that the group hadn't had before. And we realized we wanted to try some new stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, how'd you get into producing shows or co-producing?
Honestly, it was... With stand-up, I started producing, you know, partly as a way to get some regular stage time.
That's what I tell people all the time. Like, if you want to perform, just go start something. Like,
yeah. A friend of mine who I went to high school with, who lives in New York now, she produces a show that has just taken off, and, like, they tour with it. And I was always talking to her about, you know, trying to get better at stand-up and how to get into it. And she was always the one who kept telling me, make your own show, because, yeah, that's guaranteed weekly stage time. And I was like, nah. But then when Joe Gell started The Riot, we asked him and found that he had that open time slot. And then that came about like a month or two before Kevin Quigley approached me and was like, let's start the show together. And so it kind of came about all at once. The only improv show I produce is Organ Fail, and that's just because I love the idea so much. And, and then got John Serpico on board, who was also very excited, and he molded the show into what it is now. I just had, like, a general idea, and then he was like, let's do this, this, and this, and, So just, I don't know, just having, wanting to have stage time and also, like, for once having an idea.
Nice. Yeah, I get bit by like producing bug, and now like every time I think of an idea, whether it's a good idea or a bad idea, I'm like trying to figure out a way to like make a show out of it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times I'm like, I'll wake up, a lot of times it'll happen to me late at night, and I'm like, oh, that's a great idea. I'll wake up, I'm like, what? I don't even know. Like, I'll have typed notes. I'm like, this doesn't even make sense.
Just like random keywords that don't mesh together at all.
Yeah, like as I'm writing them, I'll remember what this means. Mm-hmm. Never do.
I do that for jokes all the time. I just think of like a punchline and I'm just like, that doesn't make any sense. Why would I ever say that?
Ryan, where are you from originally?
Originally, I'm from LA. So I did the reverse of a lot of people. I moved from LA to here.
Probably like planes were passing.
Yeah.
I want to get big. I'm going to Boston.
Yeah, exactly. No, I moved here when I was 11. Yeah. So, and then moved back to LA as an adult, and then moved back here also as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, I grew up in LA. I do, you know, like video related work. So moved out there. Just gonna, you know, try and be an editor. Mm-hmm. I'd still do that kind of stuff, but now I do it out here.
Do you guys make any comedy videos? Or have you thought about doing that?
You know, I've thought a lot about it. I think maybe knowing more about the process and being a huge perfectionist has stopped me from just going out with a camera mm-hmm. and doing it, and you know, just seeing like what real film sets entail and how much effort and manpower and supplies are involved.
Mm-hmm.
It always seems really daunting in my head, but I know that people go out with just a camera, not even a microphone.
I think editing goes a long way, especially with like comedy videos, because I've seen a lot of them produced, and whether they're funny or not, if they're sloppily edited, it's just jarring.
Yeah,
it takes you right out of it.
It's the probably the second thing you notice after audio. I know audio. If the audio's bad, people always notice that, no matter how good the picture looks. But yeah, after that,
if it's
slick, you can make up for a lot with tight editing.
Yes, slick editing and slick directing, and just different shots.
That's why people like Edgar Wright so much. I feel like all of his movies are so like uniquely edited to where like you just know that it's an Edgar Wright movie.
Oh yeah, a ton of the humor in mm-hmm. those movies comes from the editing. It's pretty ingenious, and one of the few comedy directors who really relies on that.
Yeah,
I think, because usually, you know, comedy, you just kind of, you know, you set up your lights for the scene. It's usually pretty soft lighting, so you can move the camera around and not mm-hmm. not have to reset too much, and just let the actors do their thing, so you get the best performances.
Because
mm-hmm. the more you stop and move the camera around and get stylistic, the more the actors have to kind of get on that rail and not change what they're doing.
Yeah. I remember in middle and high school, my friends and I, we just made a bunch of stupid videos for, it was for a youth group for this church we went to, but all of our videos, we had like Jesus and Satan being best friends that really angered people, but we didn't have editing. It was just, get this right the first time.
It was in-camera editing.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I'm using my parents' like giant 1980s like 45-pound camera. And, yeah, there wasn't yeah. editing. There wasn't lighting. It was just, do this right now.
Yes. And you actually went out and did it.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, you enjoy the end result. I know I did in our terrible, we would always do stop-motion movies
yeah.
on one of those old Hitachi full-size VHS cameras.
Oh, yeah, that's the one that we had, too.
Yeah.
Everybody has a camera now, like, on their phone or something, so it's not special, but it used to be a big deal, like, borrow somebody's camera
oh, yeah.
and like, shoot something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it looked like ass compared to what's in your pocket now.
Yeah.
I mean, like, something like iMovie, like, is it really... I don't do editing or anything like that. Like, something like iMovie, you really can make, like, a quality thing?
You can, yeah. I mean, the editing process... You know, a lot of the professional software has a ton of capability that you can, like, throw different formats at and mm-hmm. do a bunch of special things, but actually just editing picture together, yeah, you can do it in iMovie. You just have to, it's all about paying attention to stuff like pacing. And
yeah.
Editing's a skill. Like, I have no patience for it. I've tried to edit little videos in Final Cut, and I'm just like, I don't, this is frustrating. This mm-hmm. So I respect editors a lot.
Final Cut. R.I.P.
Respect.
Final Cut 7.
Yeah. Didn't they come out with a new version? And
yeah,
just
it's complete
ass.
It's more like iMovie. Yeah,
I've heard
yeah.
that.
It makes me angry.
Like, people go to Apple and request, like, to have their version reverted to the previous version. And they've been honoring that to some extent, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, you run into compatibility issues, but just, it made so much sense. I still use it sometimes. mm-hmm. for work, but yeah, good old Final Cut 7.
Acting poetic.
Yeah.
How did you get into improv?
Yeah, so like I said, I decided to take classes with my friend who I was writing stuff with, and, you know, just the whole thing, like you said about you wanted to meet people, that mm-hmm. never occurred to me at all, like, that I'd meet people that I'd be friends with.
Right.
Especially, you know, in the first class, it's a, you know, pretty diverse group, like, age ranges
and yeah.
reasons for doing it,
mm-hmm.
a lot of...
There's a lot of
get better public speaking, or yeah. my company wanted me to do this.
There's a lot of falling off after like the second level.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I stuck around with it because I.
Who are those people, by the way? They blow my mind. The people are like, ah, oh, this was kind of fun. I've had enough.
I don't know. Maybe like they, like you said, like could be doing it for public speaking or something, or. To get yeah. away from their wife.
Yeah, well, my friend dropped out after the second level because he didn't really like doing it.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, wasn't his speed, wasn't his thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get that. But, yeah, I enjoyed it a lot, and it was something that was really challenging, and something that, like I said, you know, when I said that I don't make videos because of all the giant undertaking that it is, the ease of creation in improv is something that I find really appealing.
Mm. Yeah.
You just go and you're instantly creating something, which is something that for years I, you know, was just holding myself back from. Like my friends and I would always, you know, we'd have all these big ideas about, oh, I should make a movie about this, or, you know, put this together, and then no one would really do anything about it because
mm-hmm.
it was easier just to, you know, hang out, play video games,
mm-hmm.
you know, shoot the shit, whatever. But this, and, you know, meeting people who are like-minded in improv, you know, that want to go out and want to do things and want to create,
yeah.
it's infectious.
Yeah, I can't, like... I work with a lot of different people on different projects, and the people that I want to work with the most are the ones that are just as into it as I am, or more so. Because there's nothing worse than, like, being part of a group or something where, you know, you're not getting the same output that you're putting in.
Mm-hmm.
It gets frustrating. But when you get, like, a group of people that are serious about any project, it's well worth it.
What's that one title party? I mean, when we found that, we just found like this, you know, groove. It was like right after Taylor and Ashley joined last, like, September. Like, we just were like hitting a stride, and then Ryan came on, and like it, like, completely. Sometimes a new member will just like completely change a dynamic, or even like ruin what you've been working up to. But then you just completely like fit in there, and we just like gelled around everyone's differences, and yeah, going through some changes right now, but we're putting in some work and trying to get better.
Yeah, got a new director, shift of focus.
Mm-hmm. Work on somebody new. Mm-hmm.
I think you guys are a really good independent group. Like, anytime I put on a show, I try to get you guys there, so I'm always entertained.
Oh, appreciate it. Yeah,
you always have a good set.
Yeah, you do fun shows.
Thanks. So I saw you in the, I think it was Improvised Women's Prison. Was that the name?
Yeah. That ended up being Girl Incarcerated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Such a good name.
And you were really good. That's one of the first times I was like, wow, this guy's got some chops.
Yeah,
but I remember when I was coming in, I was with my friend Laura, and you were checking bags.
Oh, yeah. We were going for the full immersive experience. So, yeah, the guards would be at the door. We rigged up a little fake-looking, it looked real, was fake, one of those metal detector wands,
mm-hmm.
you know, giving people a hard time when they entered the theater.
I was just like, what's this dude's problem? I couldn't figure it out.
It's this rent-a-cop who's just hanging out.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't have anything in her bag, man. Listen.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh. And I think I even remember Rosa, because I had Rosa on. Prior to that, I was mentioning that, I'm like, oh, all right, now it's all coming together.
Dang.
Clever. That's fun.
Yeah, it was you know, you're a character, you held on to that for the whole, like, beyond the show. So
yeah.
It was, you know, a full hour and a half of a character that you created that day.
Right. Well, I remember us talking right before one of your shows, and you were talking about, like, what you had been doing in the previous shows and trying to make sure you didn't fall into that same pattern.
Right, yeah.
You wanted to try something different.
Yeah, there were a lot of, like, prison tropes you could fall into, and you wanted to play up to that somewhat, but, you know, I didn't want to be someone who was just, like, hated everyone in every show.
Yeah.
But with that sort of guard-prisoner dynamic, there's a lot of weird limitations on it, which was hard to navigate. Definitely the most challenging show I've been a part of, but, yeah, definitely rewarding.
You did a good job, though, because, like, I can see the guard-prisoner dynamic, and, like, I could see some people just being, like, a dick the whole time, but you had, you know, character, almost like, you know, the obvious comparison would be Orange is the New Black and, like, the guards on that, where they have their redeeming qualities and their assholes, too, at times.
You know, that's intimidating to a lot of people. I mean, if you know you're going into this singular narrative show that, how long was the show, 75 minutes?
I think it was more like an hour. With the other stuff around it, I guess.
Right.
It was a little bit longer.
And I think that's so scary to a lot of people, being like, I need to make this character that I can sustain that long. Like,
yeah, in the intermission, you know, I'd be like standing there on stage in character.
Right.
Like, some of the shows people would come up.
Yeah, just like staring at people.
Yeah. Had people like give me things. In the intermission, yeah, some people got really into it. It was a lot of fun.
Like giving you their wallets?
But someone gave me a hat or something they wanted me to wear. it was in the last show. There were a lot of drunk people at that one.
You were like those London guards.
No, I would interact with them
right.
a little bit, but I didn't want to take their hats.
That's funny.
That's a good point, though, about getting locked into a character. Like, if it's not working, it's excruciating. Like, I do a two-person group, and we do a mono scene, and we had a show a couple weeks ago, and normally I'm pretty happy with the way our shows turn out, but this particular one, we both just picked really bad characters, and it was the longest 15 minutes of my life.
Yeah. The new person who we're working with is doing wonders for, like, forcing us to, like, build something out of just, like, the simplest, easiest beginnings, and then just, like, be allowing you to just discover more as you're going along, rather than, like, walking in, which is such a bad habit of mine, like, being so heady and, like, righty. Like, I'm like, I'm going to walk out and be this character with this, 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 and this, and that's dumb.
Especially with longer scenes, and not even necessarily mono scenes, but if you come in really premise heavy, you're either going to get have a series of tag outs and people just are going to start escalating, and there's not going to be any character development. It's just going to be, oh, well, look at this. Well, now look at this. Mm-hmm. Or, I don't know. That's all.
Yeah.
Which can be a lot of fun, but it gets hard to sustain that.
Yeah.
You noticed over long periods of time if you don't have that like grounding that you need, that things like objectives.
When Taylor Cotter and I, we do a duoprov now. We haven't had a show in a while, but we've been trying to fit that in. We do a duoprov, and like we first started working together because we always made each other break in rehearsals, and which we thought was really fun. But we realized we're both so horribly premise heavy, and so that's just been a bad habit of both of ours that we've been trying to. It's nice to like work so directly with a person who has the same problem as you.
Yeah.
And you just sort of force each other to overcome that.
Yeah, especially doing duoprov, having a good partner that you can trust, even if it's trusting that they're going to make the same mistakes as you, I guess. But
sure.
My current partner, we do monotone, Laura. Like, I have no reservations at all. Like, I know we just get each other's sense of humor. So, aside from that one terrible scene I just described, we've had pretty good scenes. And I know, like, I can trust whatever
her instincts are going to be. Like,
yeah.
Whereas a lot of times, depending on who you're working with, or I do like a lot of random shows. Like, if you don't know somebody's style, you can just go in all sorts of different directions, and then
mm-hmm.
what you're thinking is going to work doesn't click with them, and then you just find yourself in all these odd scenes. But
yeah,
I mean, that's good too, because it sometimes you get stuck in your own style too much, I think.
Right.
And it's good to be able just to improvise with anyone.
You start to feel like, this is what I'm doing well, so I'm just going to keep doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
And that might lead to some good shows and some good laughs, and you feel good about it, but then
you're losing the heart of it.
Yeah, it starts getting stale.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You start becoming a lame duck.
So where you guys are now in your improv careers, how do you feel, or comedy careers in general, and where do you ultimately want to take them?
Yeah. Ryan here.
Yeah, I wonder if we're completely not able to, like, people cannot tell us apart at all.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I have a little higher voice. You're more back of the throat.
Really?
A little more. I think I'm a little more easily. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. Just do movie guy voice from here on out.
Okay.
Let people
yeah.
know. But yeah, comedy career. I don't have any real, like, aspirations for stardom or anything like that. I would just like to keep maintaining this as a creative outlet, and maintain a balance with the rest of my life, which has been a challenge.
It's important though.
Yeah. Who came up with that term? Luke Bruno, the term DP.
Double penetration?
No. Well, yes. No, he came up with the meaning divorce prevention.
Right.
Yes. Putting in that work. I'm married, and in the past couple of years, past year especially, that I've been doing more shows and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've been putting a lot of time into that. I live kind of far away, so making time to be with my wife and things like that, and see friends who don't do comedy becomes challenging, but I think I'm finding a better balance with that, and they feed each other, of course.
Yeah, because life experience gives you stuff to pull from.
Exactly.
Know?
Yeah,
just being married is an experience, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but to be able to, I think, maintain that, maybe, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what stand up does to me later this month.
Yeah.
See if I hate it or not.
Get hooked.
Yeah, maybe I'll be hooked.
Just a life of drugs, booze, and whoring it up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
My marriage was going great until I did the break-in.
Comedy career.
Sorry, I wanted to do it once.
is that a Mortal Kombat thing?
No, like movie trailer, you know?
Oh, all right.
In the city.
I mean, I don't necessarily have, like, the same, you know, like, I'm not married, and I have a bit more free time to devote to it, just because, I mean, I think especially starting stand-up, I've started to get a bit more hooked, and not that I'm, like, I'm entertaining dreams of stardom, but, like, you know, as long as I'm still able to keep working with my friends and doing something that I really enjoy, and like for a creative outlet or even like an emotional outlet, you know, like being able to like process myself and be vulnerable on a stage, I think it makes me feel better. Something I really makes me happy. And so the better I can get and the better I feel about it is really just like the dream, I guess.
Nice. What do you guys got coming up for shows?
What do we got coming up?
Oregon Fail is
at
Indie Night next Thursday.
That keeps adding shows. Indie Night at the Riot Theater in Jamaica Plain.
Yeah. Cuddle Party is doing the musical comedy lab at Improv Boston on July 22nd. Right?
Are you all going to
yes.
be singing?
That's the show I won't be at.
Yeah, the one musician in the group who is somewhat talented at that, well, very talented at that, is not going to be there.
Yep.
Oregon Phil, the musical. Cuddle Party is something else in August. We probably another indie night. Oregon failed indie night at the Riot.
Well, that keeps adding shows. Today. Look out for Baby Cut, my sketch group that I'm a part of. Be a real like on our Facebook page. We keep getting all these weird fake likes from people in a lot of Middle Eastern and South Asian.
Same with Cuddle Party.
Yeah.
Do you get the notifications on that?
Robot Arms was getting that, too. I don't understand the end game.
Yeah,
probably 70% of our likes. Well, the name is Baby Cut, and I've noticed, because I'll go look at who these people are, and a decent percentage of them are teenage girls from the States who also like a page called Baby Don't Cut, and I think they're cutters.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Why is this your name?
I thought it was a circumcision thing.
Why is Baby Cut your name?
It was Mo. Mo came up with it.
I don't get it.
We were playing Pictionary once, and she kept guessing Baby Cut or something. Yeah. And she insisted that they be Baby Cut.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So it's the name. Check us out. We have a lot of fake likes. One of them tried to friend me on Facebook yesterday, and their profile picture was him standing next to an anti-aircraft gun.
Nice.
So that was good.
It's good to know his interests.
Yeah.
As far as I go, I got a couple projects. Improv Cares, which is a new initiative just started, is looking for organizations that could use free improv lessons for whatever your organization might be. I think improv teaches a lot of important life skills that people could just benefit from. I've benefited from it a ton, and I was hoping to pass that along to people. So it's basically a two-pronged thing. We're going to get volunteers from improvisers throughout the Boston community to volunteer and teach lessons and maybe help produce a small show for whatever these organizations are that sign up. Like right now we're talking to a shelter for women and possibly working with them. We've got some other ones in the works, and there should be some details coming out next week for the first events. There's a Facebook page. There's going to be a website coming up, improvcares.net, but sign up to volunteer on the Facebook page as a sign-up form, and hopefully we can grow this thing out. Another project, me and Mike Cox from Chico and Studio 40 are working on, is called BAIT, Boston Annual Improv Tournament. It's going to be a 24-team tournament in August to determine who's the best indie improv team in Boston. So,
oh, my.
Everybody should sign up if you have a team. It's got a kind of unique format, which Mike came up with. He can have the credit for this. It's 12 minutes of long form, 5 minutes of short form, and a 2-minute line game each team has to do. The qualifying rounds, which will be held over the course of Sundays in August. If your team signs up, you only have to perform at one of these qualifying rounds, so it's not a huge time commitment. The audience will judge the qualifying rounds, and then the finals, which is Thursday, August 24th, I believe, will be held, and there'll be a panel of judges from various theaters, and we're going to have some prizes and stuff, so it's worth checking out. Also have a show called Rhythm and Laughs at the Riot Theater on July 17th, Friday night at 10. It's a mix of improv and acoustic music. We improvise montages based on the singer-songwriter's music. In between each song, we'll improvise a montage based on whatever that song was about or inspired us to improvise about. I have On Point Improv on July 13th. It's a Monday. That's the show for new indie teams, and any team can show up. Sign up, and any improviser can just show up, and you are guaranteed a spot to perform. There's a team called Improv 2 which is comprised of other solo improvisers, and they have a 15-minute slot at every on-point show. So if you're a solo improviser and you're just looking to get some stage time, this is the show for you. I think that's about it for now. Monotone, my two-person group, we got a bunch of gigs in July. We got Awkward Compliment next Thursday. We have Indie Night at the Riot. I think maybe the same night you guys are going to be there. I think the 23rd. And then got another gig at the end of the month.
Oh, we're not there on the 23rd.
Well, you're doing stand-up on the 23rd.
Oh, yes. Damn.
The 23rd.
Oh, yes, yes. The night of stand-up, yes.
yeah, that's about it. So,
cool.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
And thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.